All right, we are starting chapter 54 of Pride and Prejudice and the Prisoner of Azkaban. As soon as they were gone, Elizabeth walked out to recover her spirits, or in other words, to dwell without interruption on those subjects that must deaden them more. Mr. Darcy's behavior astonished and vexed her. "Why, if he only came to be silent, grave, and indifferent," said she, "why did he come at all?" She could settle it in no way that gave her pleasure. He could still be amiable, still pleasing, in my uncle and aunt, when he was in town, and why not to me? If he fears me, why come hither? If he no longer cares for me, why silent? Teasing, teasing man, I will think no more about him." Her resolution was for a short time involuntarily kept by the approach of her sister, who joined her with a cheerful look, which showed her better satisfied with their visitors than Elizabeth. Her resolution was for a short time involved. Oh, I said that. "Now," said she, "that this first meeting is over, I feel perfectly easy. I know my own strength, and I shall never be embarrassed again by his coming. I'm glad he dines here on Tuesday. It will then be publicly seen that, on both sides, we meet only as common and indifferent acquaintances."
Yeah, right.
"Yes, very indifferent indeed," said Elizabeth, laughingly. "Oh, Jane, take care." "My dear Lizzie, you cannot think me so weak as to be in danger now." "I think you are in very great danger of making him as much in love with you as ever." They did not see the gentleman again till Tuesday, and Mrs. Bennet, in the meanwhile, was giving way to all the happy schemes which the good humor and common politeness of Bingley in half an hour's visit had received. On Tuesday, there was a large party assembled at Longbourn, and the two who were most anxiously expected, to the credit of their punctuality as sportsmen, were in very good time. When they repaired to the dining room, Elizabeth eagerly watched to see whether Bingley would take the place which in all their former parties had belonged to him by her sister. Her prudent mother, occupied by the same ideas, forbore to invite him to sit by herself. On entering the room, he seemed to hesitate, but Jane happened to look round and happened to smile. It was decided. He placed himself by her. I love that all it takes is a smile.
Yeah.
And then he's like,
what was that noise again, babe?
It goes something like, "Come over here.
Wait a minute.
What are you doing?"
"Nothing, keep going."
Elizabeth, with a triumphant sensation, looked toward his friend. He bore it with noble indifference, and she would have imagined that Bingley had received his sanction to be happy had she not seen his eyes likewise turned toward Mr. Darcy with an expression of half-laughing alarm. His behavior toward her sister was such, during dinner time, as showed an admiration of her, which, though more guarded than formerly, persuaded Elizabeth that if left wholly to himself, Jane's happiness and his own would be speedily secured. Though she dared not depend upon the consequence, she yet received pleasure from observing his behavior. It gave her all the animation that her spirits could boast, for she was in no cheerful humor. Mr. Darcy was almost as far from her as the table could divide them. He was on one side of her mother. She knew how little such a situation would give pleasure to either, or make either appear to disadvantage. She was not near enough to hear any of their discourse, but she could see how seldom they spoke to each other, and how formal and cold was their manner whenever they did. Her mother's ungraciousness made the sense of what they owed him more painful to Elizabeth's mind, and she would at times have given anything to be privileged to tell him that his kindness was neither unknown nor unfelt by the whole of the family. She was in hopes that the evening would afford some opportunity of bringing them together, that the whole of the visit would not pass away without enabling them to enter into something more of a conversation than the more ceremonious salutation attending his entrance. Anxious and uneasy, the period which passed in the drawing room before the gentleman came was wearisome and dull to a degree that made her almost uncivil. She looked forward to the entrance as the point on which all her chance of pleasure for the evening must depend. "If he does not come up to me then," said she, "I shall give him up forever." The gentleman came, and she thought he looked as if he would have answered her hopes, but alas, the ladies had crowded round the table where Miss Bennet was making tea, and Elizabeth pouring out the coffee, in so close a confederacy that there was not a single vacancy near her which would admit a chair. And on the gentleman's approaching, one of the girls moved closer to her than ever, and said in a whisper, "The men shan't come and part us, I'm determined. We want none of them, do we? Darcy. Yeah. No, what's the equivalent?
Pussy block?
Clam block.
Clam block. Not the same. Shell block.
Shell block. Darcy had walked away to another part of the room. She followed him with her eyes, envied everyone to whom he spoke, had scarcely patience enough to help anybody to coffee, and then was enraged against herself for being so silly. Does it sound familiar?
No.
A man who has once been refused, how could I ever be foolish enough to expect a renewal of his love? Is there one among the sex who would not protest against such a weakness as a second proposal to the same woman? There is no indignity so abhorrent to their feelings. She was She was a little revived, however, by his bringing back his coffee cup himself, and she seized the opportunity of saying, "Is your sister at Pemberley still?" "Yes, and she will remain there till Christmas." "And quite alone? Have all her friends left her?" "Mrs. Annesley is with her. The others have gone on to Scarborough these 3 weeks. There's a fair there."
I heard there's also some herbs.
Some herbs. Stop! Stop! He's so cute. She could think of nothing more to say, but if he wished to converse with her, he might have better success. He stood by her, however, for some minutes in silence, and at last, on the young lady's whispering to Elizabeth again, he walked away. They're so awkward.
Mm-hmm.
They never know what to say to each other. Mm-mm. When the tea things were removed and the card tables placed, the ladies all rose, and Elizabeth was then hoping to be soon joined by him, when all her views were overthrown by seeing him fall a victim to her mother's rapacity for whist players, and in a few moments after seated with the rest of the party. She now lost every expectation of pleasure. They were confined for the evening at different tables, and she had nothing to hope but that his eyes were so often turned toward her side of the room as to make him play as unsuccessfully as herself. She's so in love.
Mm-hmm.
She's like falling over herself.
She's hot enough.
Yep. Mrs. Bennet had designed to keep the two Netherfield gentlemen to supper, but their carriage was unluckily ordered before any of the others, and she had no opportunity of detaining them. "Well, girls," said she, as soon as they were left to themselves, "what say you to the day? I think everything has passed off uncommonly well, I assure you. The dinner was as well dressed as I ever saw. The venison was roasted to a turn, and everybody said that they never saw so fat a haunch. The soup was 50 times better than what we had at the Lucas's last week, and even Mr. Darcy acknowledged that the partridges were remarkably well done. And I suppose he has 2 or 3 French cooks, at the least. And, my dear Jane, I never saw you looked in greater beauty. Mrs. Long said so, too, for I asked her whether you did not. And what do you think she said besides? Ah, Mrs. Bennet, we shall have her at Netherfield at last. She did indeed. I do think Mrs. Long is as good a creature as ever lived, and her nieces are very pretty behaved girls, and not at all handsome. I like them prodigiously." Mrs. Bennet, in short, was in very great spirits. She had seen enough of Bingley's behavior to Jane to be convinced that she would get him at last, and her expectations of advantage to her family, when in a happy humor, were so far beyond reason that she was quite disappointed at not seeing him there the next day to make his proposals. "It has been a very agreeable day," said Miss Bennet to Elizabeth. "The party seemed so well suited, so suitable with one another. I hope we may meet often again." Elizabeth smiled. "Lizzie, you must not do so. You must not suspect me. It mortifies me. I assure you that I have now learnt to enjoy his conversation as an agreeable and sensible young man, without having a wish beyond it. I am perfectly satisfied from what his manners now are, that he never had any designs of engaging my affection. It is only that he is blessed with greater sweetness of address and a stronger desire of generally pleasing than any other man."
You are
very cruel, said her sister. "You will not let me smile, and are provoking me to it every moment. How hard, in some cases, to be believed, and how impossible in others. Why should you wish to persuade me that I feel more than I acknowledge?" "That is a question which I hardly know how to answer. We all love to instruct, though we can teach only what is not worth knowing. Forgive me, and if you persist in indifference, do not make me your confidant." Chapter 55.
Whee!
A few days after this visit, Mr. Bingley called again, and alone. His friend had left him that morning for London, but was to return home in 10 days' time. He sat with them above an hour and was in remarkably good spirits. Mrs. Bennet invited him to dine with them, but with many expressions of concern, he confessed himself engaged elsewhere. "Next time you call," said she, "I hope we shall be more lucky. He should be particularly happy at any time, etc., etc., and if she would give him leave, it would take an early opportunity of waiting on them. Can you come tomorrow?" "Yes," he said, for he had no engagement at all for tomorrow, and her invitation was accepted with alacrity. He came, and in such very good time that the ladies were none of them dressed. Mm-hmm. In ran Mrs. Bennet to her daughter's room, in her dressing gown, with her hair half finished, crying out, "My dear Jane, make haste and hurry down. He has come. Mr. Bingley has come. He is indeed. Make haste, make haste. Here, Sarah, come to Miss Bennet this moment and help her on with her gown. Never mind Miss Lizzie's hair." That reminds me of whenever, especially early on, I would come to visit you. You'd make me sit in my car or like in the bookstore, like, "No, I'm not ready yet."
I know.
And finally you realize that I don't care whether you look hideous or not.
No. And that you really can't tell the difference.
No, you always look beautiful.
Isn't he the best?
He is the best. He's going to continue reading now. Okay. "We'll all be down as soon as we can," said Jane. "But I dare say Kitty is forwarder than either of us, for she went upstairs half an hour ago." "Oh, hang Kitty. What has she to do with it? Come, be quick, be quick. Where's your sash, my dear?" When her mother was gone, Jane would not be prevailed on to go down without one of her sisters. The same anxiety to get them by themselves was visible again in the evening. After tea, Mr. Bennet retired to the library, as was his custom, and Mary went upstairs to her instrument. Two obstacles of five being thus removed, Mrs. Bennet sat looking and winking at Elizabeth and Catherine for a considerable time, without making any impression on them. Elizabeth would not observe her, and when at last Kitty did, she said very innocently, "What is the matter, Mama? Why do you keep winking at me for? What am I to do?" "Nothing, child, nothing. I did not wink at you." She then sat still 5 minutes longer, but unable to waste such a precious occasion, she suddenly got up, and saying to Kitty, "Come here, my love, I want to speak to you," took her out of the room. Jane instantly gave a look at Elizabeth, which spoke her distress in such premeditation and her entreaty that she would not give in to it, too. In a few minutes, Mrs. Bennet half opened the door and called out, "Lizzie, my dear, I want to speak to you." Elizabeth was forced to go. "We may as well leave them by themselves, you know," said her mother, as soon as she was in the hall. "Kitty and I are going upstairs to sit in my dressing room." Elizabeth made no attempt to reason with her, but remained quietly in the hall till she and Kitty were out of sight, and then returned into the drawing room. Mrs. Bennet's schemes for this day were ineffectual. Bingley was everything that was charming, except the professed lover of his daughter.
Of his daughter?
Of her daughter. His ease and cheerfulness rendered him a most agreeable addition to the evening party, and he bore with the ill-judged officiousness of the mother, and heard all her silly comments with a forbearance and command of countenance particularly grateful to the daughter. He scarcely needed an invitation to stay supper, and before he went away an engagement was formed cheerfully through his own and Mrs. Bennet's means for his coming next morning to shoot with her husband. After this day, Jane said no more of her indifference. Not a word passed between the sisters concerning Bingley, but Elizabeth went to bed in the happy belief that all must be speedily concluded unless Mr. Darcy returned within the stated time. Seriously, however, she felt tolerably persuaded that all this must have taken place with that gentleman's concurrence. Bingley was punctual to his appointment, and he and Mr. Bennet spent the morning together, as had been agreed upon. The latter was much more agreeable than his companion expected. There was nothing of presumption or folly in Bingley that could provoke his ridicule or disgust him into silence, and he was more communicative and less eccentric than the other had ever seen him. Bingley, of course, returned with him to dinner, and in the evening Mrs. Bennet's invitation was again at work to get everybody away from him and her daughter. Elizabeth, who had a letter to write, went into the breakfast room for the purpose soon after tea, for as the others were going down to sit down to cards, she could not be wanted to counteract her mother's schemes. But on returning to the drawing room, when her letter was finished, she saw, to her infinite surprise, There was reason to fear that her mother had been too ingenious for her. On opening the door, she perceived her sister and Bigby standing together over the hearth, as if engaged in earnest conversation, and had this led to no suspicion, the faces of both, as they hastily turned round and moved away from each other, would have told it all. The situation was awkward enough, but hers, she thought, was still worse. Not a syllable was uttered by either, and Elizabeth was on the point of going away again when Bingley, as well as the other, had sat down, suddenly rose, and whispering a few words to her sister, ran out of the room. Jane could have no reserves from Elizabeth where confidence would give pleasure, and instantly embracing her, acknowledged with the liveliest emotion that she was the happiest creature in the world. "It is too much," she added, "by far too much. I do not deserve it. Oh, why is not everybody as happy?" Elizabeth's congratulations were given with a sincerity, a warmth, a delight, which words could but poorly express. Every sentence of kindness was a fresh source of happiness to Jane, but she would not allow her to stay with her sister, or say half that remained to be said for the present. "I must go instantly to my mother," she cried. "I would not on any occasion trifle with her affectionate solitude, or allow her to hear it from anyone but myself. He's gone to my father already. Oh, Lizzie, to know that what I have to relate will give such pleasure to all my dear family. How shall I bear so much happiness?" She then hastened away to her mother, who had purposely broken up the card party and was sitting upstairs with Kitty. Elizabeth, who was left by herself, now smiled at the rapidity and ease with which an affair was finally settled that had given them so many previous months of suspense and vexation. "And this," said she, "is the end of all his friend's anxious circumspection, all of his sister's falsehood and contrivance, the happiest, wisest, most reasonable end." In a few minutes, she was joined by Bingley, whose conference with her father had been short and to the purpose. "Where is your sister?" said he hastily, as he opened the door. "With my mother upstairs. She'll be down in a moment, I dare say." He then shut the door, and coming up to her, claimed the good wishes and affection of his sister. Elizabeth honestly and heartily expressed her delight in the prospect of their relationship. They shook hands with great cordiality, and then, till her sister came down, she had to listen to all he had to say of his own happiness, and of Jane's perfections, in spite of his being a lover. Elizabeth really believed all his expectations of felicity to be rationally founded, because they had, for basis, the excellent understanding and super-excellent disposition of Jane, and a general similarity of feeling and taste between her and himself. It was an evening of no common delight to them all. The satisfaction of Miss Bennet's mind gave a glow of such sweet animation to her face as made her look handsomer than ever. Kitty simpered and smiled, and hoped her turn coming soon. Mrs. Bennet could not give her consent or speak her approbation in terms warm enough to satisfy her feelings, though she talked to Bingley of nothing else for half an hour, and when Mr. Bennet joined them at supper, his voice and manner plainly showed how really happy he was. Not a word, however, passed his lips in allusion to it till their visitor took his leave for the night, but as soon as he was gone, he turned to his daughter and said, "Jane, I congratulate you. You will be a very happy woman." Elizabeth went to him instantly and kissed him and thanked him for his goodness. "You are a good girl," he replied, "and I have great pleasure in thinking you'll be so happily settled. I have not a doubt." Pause. And we're back. "You are a good girl," he replied, "and I have great pleasure in thinking you'll be so happily settled. I have not a doubt of your doing well, very well together. Your tempers are by no means unlike. You are each of you so complying that nothing will ever be resolved on, so easy that every servant will cheat you, so generous that you will always exceed your income." "I hope not so. Imprudence or thoughtlessness in money matters would be unpardonable in me." "Exceed their income, my dear Mr. Bennet," cried his wife. "What are you talking of? Why, he has 4,000 or 5,000 a year, and very likely more." Then he addressed her daughter. "Oh, my dear Jane, I'm so happy. I'm sure I shan't get a wink of sleep all night. I knew how it would be. I always said it must be so at last. I was sure you could not be so beautiful for nothing." "I remember as soon as I ever saw him, when he first came into Hertfordshire last year, how I thought it was likely that you should come together. Oh, he is the handsomest young man that was ever seen. Wickham, Lydia were all forgotten. Jane was beyond competition her favorite child. At that moment she cared for no other. Her younger sisters soon began to make interest with her for objects of happiness, which she might in future be able to dispense. Mary petitioned for the use of the library at Netherfield, and Kitty begged very hard for a few balls there every winter. Bingley from this time was, of course, a daily visitor at Longbourn, coming frequently before breakfast and always remaining till after supper. Unless when some barbarous neighbor, who could not enough be detested, had given him an invitation to dinner which he thought himself obliged to accept. Elizabeth had now but little time for conversation with her sister, for while he was present, Jane had no attention to bestow on anyone else, but she found herself considerably useful to both of them in these hours of separation that must sometimes occur. In the absence of Jane, he always attached himself to Elizabeth for the pleasure of talking to her, and when Bingley was gone, Jane constantly sought the same means of relief. "He's made me so happy," said she one evening, "by telling me he was totally ignorant of my being in town last spring. I had not believed it possible." "I suspected as much," replied Elizabeth, "but how did he account for it?" "It must have been his sister's doing," said she. "They were certainly no friends to his acquaintance with me, which I cannot wonder at, since he might have chosen so much more advantageously in many respects. But when they see, as I trust they will, that their brother is happy with me, they will learn to be contented, and we shall be on good terms again, that we can never be what we once were to each other." "That is the most unforgiving speech," said Elizabeth, "that I ever heard you utter. Good girl, it would vex me indeed to see you again the dupe of Miss Bingley's pretended regard." "Would you believe it, Lizzie, that when he went to town last November, he really loved me, and nothing but persuasion of my being indifferent would have prevented his coming down again?" "He made a little modesty, to be sure, but it is to the credit of his modesty. A little mistake, to be sure, but it is to the credit of his modesty." This naturally introduced a panegyric from Jane on his diffidence, and the little value he put on his own good qualities. Elizabeth was pleased to find out that he had not betrayed the interference of his friend, for, though Jane had the most generous and forgiving heart in the world, she knew it was a circumstance which must prejudice her against him. "I am certainly the most fortunate creature that ever existed," cried Jane. "Oh, Lizzie, why am I thus singled from my family and blessed above them all? If I could but see you as happy, if there were but such another man for you..." "Oh, who could it be?" "If you were to give me 40 such men," said Elizabeth, "I never could be as happy as you. Till I have your disposition, your goodness, I can never have your happiness. No, no, let me shift for myself, and perhaps, if I have very good luck, I may meet another Mr. Collins in time." The situation of affairs in the Longbourn family could not be long a secret. Mrs. Bennet was privileged to whisper it to Mrs. Phillips, and she ventured without any permission to do the same by all her neighbors in Meryton. The Bennets were speedily pronounced to be the luckiest family in the world, though only a few weeks before, when Lydia had first run away, they had been generally proved to be marked out for misfortune. Chapter 56. One morning, about a week after Bingley's engagement with Jane had been formed, as he and the females of the family were sitting together in the dining room, their attention was suddenly drawn to the window by the sound of a carriage, and they perceived a chaise and four driving up the lawn. It was too early in the morning for visitors, and besides, the equipage did not answer to any of that of their neighbors. The horses were post, and neither the carriage nor the livery of the servant who preceded it were familiar to them. As it was certain, however, that somebody was coming, Bingley instantly prevailed on Miss Bennet to avoid the confinement of such an intrusion and walk away with him into the shrubbery. They both set off, and conjectures of the remaining three continued, though with little satisfaction, till the door was thrown open, and their visitor entered. It was Lady Catherine de Bourgh. They were, of course, all intending to be surprised, but their astonishment was beyond their expectations, and on the part of Mrs. Bennet and Kitty, though she was perfectly unknown to them, even inferior to what Elizabeth felt. She entered the room with an air more than usually ungracious, made no other reply to Elizabeth's salutation than a slight inclination of the head, and sat down without saying a word. Elizabeth had mentioned her name to her mother on her ladyship's entrance, though no request of introduction had been made. Mrs. Bennet, all amazement, though flattered by having a guest of such high importance, received her with the utmost politeness. After sitting for a moment in silence, she said very stiffly to Elizabeth, "I hope you are well, Miss Bennet. That lady, I suppose, is your mother." Elizabeth replied very concisely that she was. And that, I suppose, is one of your sisters? Yes, madam, said Mrs. Bennet, delighted to speak to Lady Catherine. She is my youngest girl but one. The youngest of all is lately married, and my eldest is somewhere about the grounds walking with a young man who I believe will soon become part of a family. You have a very small park here, returned Lady Catherine after a short silence. Oh, it is nothing in comparison with Rosings, my lady, I dare say, but I assure you it is much larger than Sir William Lucas's. This must be a most inconvenient sitting room for the evening. In summer, the windows are full west. Mrs. Bennet assured her that they never sat there after dinner, and then added, May I take the liberty of asking your friendship, your ladyship, whether you left Mr. and Mrs. Collins well? Yes, very well. I saw them the night before last. Elizabeth now expected that she would produce a letter from Charlotte, as it seemed the only probable motive for her calling. But no letter appeared, and she was completely puzzled. Mrs. Bennet, with great civility, begged her ladyship to take some refreshment, but Lady Catherine very resolutely, and not very politely, declined eating anything, and then, rising up, said to Elizabeth, Miss Bennet, there seemed to be a prettyish kind of little wilderness on one side of your lawn. I shall be glad to take a turn in it, if you will favor me with your company. Go, my dear, cried her mother, and show her ladyship about the different walks. I think she'll be pleased with the hermitage. I think I know what she's here for. Am I right? Elizabeth obeyed, and running into her own room for her parasol, attended her noble guest downstairs. As they passed through the hall, Lady Catherine opened the doors and into the dining parlor and drawing room, and pronouncing them, in a short survey, to be decent-looking rooms, and walked on. Her carriage remained at the door, and Elizabeth saw that her waiting woman was in it. They proceeded in silence along the gravel walk that led to the copse. Elizabeth was determined to make no effort for conversation with a woman who was now more than usually insolent and disagreeable. How can I ever think her like her nephew? Said she as she looked into her face. As they entered the copse, Lady Catherine began in the following manner. You can be at no loss, Miss Bennet, to understand the reason of my journey hither. Your own heart, your own conscience, must tell you why I come. Elizabeth looked with unaffected astonishment. Indeed, you are mistaken, madam. I have not been at all able to account for the honor of seeing you here. Miss Bennet, replied her ladyship, in an angry tone, you ought to know that I am not to be trifled with. But however insincere you may choose to be, you shall not find me so. My character has ever been celebrated for its sincerity and frankness, and in a cause of such moment as this, I shall certainly not depart from it. A report of a most alarming nature reached me 2 days ago. I was told that not only your sister was on the point of being most advantageously married, but that you, that Miss Elizabeth Bennet, would in all likelihood be soon afterward united to my own nephew, Mr. Darcy. Though I know it must be a scandalous falsehood, though I would not injure him so much as to suppose the truth of it possible, I instantly resolved on setting off for this place that I might make my sentiments known to you. If you believed it impossible to be true, said Elizabeth, coloring with astonishment and disdain, I wonder why you took the trouble of coming so far. What could your ladyship propose by it? At once to insist upon having such a report universally contradicted. Your coming to Longbourn to see me and my family, said Elizabeth coolly, will be rather a confirmation of it, if indeed such a report is in existence. If, do you then pretend to be ignorant of it? Has it not been industrially circulated by yourselves? Do you not know that such a report is spread abroad? I never heard that it was, said Elizabeth. And can you likewise declare that there is no foundation to it? I do not pretend to possess equal frankness with your ladyship. You may ask questions which I shall not choose to answer. This is not to be borne. Miss Bennet, I insist on being satisfied. Has my nephew... We're going to pause. And we're back after a long break. And we'll back up just one sentence. This is not to be borne. Miss Bennet, I insist on being satisfied. Has my nephew, made you an offer of marriage? You remember, this is Lady Catherine talking. Your ladyship has declared it to be impossible. It ought to be so, it must be so, while he retains the use of his reason. But your arts and allurements may, in a moment of infatuation, have made him forget what he owes to himself and to all his family. You may have drawn him in. If I have, I shall be the last person to confess it, said Elizabeth. Miss Bennet, do you know who I am? I have not been accustomed to such language as this. I am almost the nearest relation he has in the world, and I am entitled to know all his dearest concerns. But you are not entitled to know mine, nor will such behavior as this ever induce me to be explicit. Let me be rightly understood, said she. This match, to which you have the presumption to aspire, can never take place. No, never. Mr. Darcy is engaged to my daughter. Now, what have you to say? Only this, that if he is so, you can have no reason to suppose he will make an offer to me. Lady Catherine hesitated for a moment and then replied. The engagement between them is of a peculiar kind. From their infancy, they have been intended for each other. It was the favorite wish of his mother, as well as of hers. While in their cradles, we planned the union. And now, at the moment when the wishes of both sisters would be accomplished in their marriage, to be prevented by a young woman of inferior birth, of no importance in the world, and wholly unallied to the family. Do you pay no regard to the wishes of his friends, to his tacit engagement with Miss de Bourgh? Are you lost to every feeling of propriety and delicacy? Have you not heard me say that from his earliest hours he was destined for his cousin? Yes, and I have heard it before, said Elizabeth. But what is that to me? If there is no other objection to my marrying your nephew, I shall certainly not be kept from it by knowing that his mother and aunt wished him to marry Miss de Bourgh. You both did as much as you could in planning the marriage. Its completion depended on others. If Mr. Darcy is neither by honor nor inclination confined to his cousin, why is he not to make another choice? And if I am that choice, why may I not accept him? Because honor, decorum, prudence, nay, interest, forbid it, said Mr. Berg. Sorry, I meant Lady Catherine, whatever her name is. Yes, Miss Bennet, interest, for do not expect to be noticed by his family or friends. If you willfully act against the inclinations of all, you will be censured, slighted, and despised by everyone connected with him. Your alliance will be a disgrace. Your name will never even be mentioned by any of us. These are heavy misfortunes, replied Elizabeth. But the wife of Mr. Darcy must have such extraordinary sources of happiness necessarily attached to her situation that she could, upon the whole, have no cause to repine. Obstinate, headstrong girl, I am ashamed of you. Is this your gratitude for my attentions to you last spring? Is nothing due to me on that score? Let us sit down. You are to understand, Miss Bennet, that I came here with a determined resolution of carrying my purpose, nor will I be dissuaded from it. I have not been used to submit to any person's whims. I have not been in the habit of brooking disappointment. That will make your ladyship's situation at present more pitiable, but it will have no effect on me. I will not be interrupted. Hear me in silence. My daughter and my nephew are formed for each other. They are descended on the material side from the same noble line, and on the father's from respectable, honorable, and ancient, though untitled, families. Their fortune on both sides is splendid. They are destined for each other by the voice of every member of their respective houses, and what is to divide them? The upstart pretensions of a young woman without family, connections, or fortune? Is this to be endured? But it must not, shall not be. If you were sensible of your own good, you would not wish to quit the sphere in which you have been brought up. In marrying your nephew, I should not consider myself as quitting that sphere. He is a gentleman. I am a gentleman's daughter. So far, we are equal. True, you are a gentleman's daughter. But who is your mother? Who are your uncles and aunts? Do not imagine me ignorant of their condition. Whatever my connections may be, said Elizabeth, if your nephew does not object to them, they can be nothing to you. Tell me once for all, are you engaged to him? Though Elizabeth would not, for the mere purpose of obliging Lady Catherine, have answered this question, she could not but say, after a moment's deliberation, I am not. Lady Catherine seemed pleased. And will you promise me never to enter into such an engagement? I will make no promise of the kind. Miss Bennet, I am shocked and astonished. I expected to find a more reasonable young woman. But do not deceive yourself into a belief that will ever recede. I shall not go away till you have given me the assurance I require. And I certainly never shall give it. I am not to be intimidated into anything so wholly unreasonable. Your ladyship wants Mr. Darcy to marry your daughter, but would my giving you the wished-for promise make their marriage at all more probable? Supposing him to be attached to me, would my refusing to accept his hand make him wish to bestow it on his cousin? Allow me to say, Lady Catherine, that the arguments with which you have supported this extraordinary application have been as frivolous as the application was ill-judged. You have widely mistaken my character, if you think I can be worked on by such persuasions as these. How far your nephew might approve of your interference in his affairs, I cannot tell, but you certainly have no right to concern yourself in mine. I must beg, therefore, to be importuned no farther on the subject. Not so hasty, if you please. I have by no means done. To all the objections I have already urged, I have still another to add. I am no stranger to the particulars of your youngest sister's infamous elopement. I know it all, that the young man's marrying her was a patched-up business at the expense of your father and uncles. And is such a girl to be my nephew's sister? Is her husband? Is the son of his late father's steward to be his brother? Heaven and earth, what are you thinking? Are the shades of Pemberley to be thus polluted? You can have now nothing further to say, she resentfully answered. You've insulted me in every possible method. I must beg you to return to the house. As she rose as she spoke. Lady Catherine rose also, and they turned back. Her ladyship was highly incensed. You have no regard, then, for the honor and credit of my nephew? Unfeeling, selfish girl. Do you not consider that a connection with you must disgrace him in the eyes of everybody? Lady Catherine, I have nothing further to say. You know my sentiments. You are then resolved to have him? I have said no such thing. I am only resolved to act in that manner which will, in my own opinion, constitute my happiness without reference to you or any other person so wholly unconnected with me. It is well. You refuse, then, to oblige me. You refuse to obey the claims of duty, honor, and gratitude. You are determined to ruin him in the opinion of all his friends, and make him the contempt of the world. Neither duty, nor honor, nor gratitude, replied Elizabeth, have any possible claim on me in the present instance. No principle of either would be violated by my marriage with Mr. Darcy. And with regard to the resentment of his family, or the indignation of the world, if the former were excited by his marrying me, it would not give me one moment's concern, and the world in general would have too much sense to join in the scorn. And this is your real opinion? This is your final resolve? Very well. I shall know now how to act. Do not imagine, Miss Bennet, that your ambition will ever be gratified. I came to try you. I hope to find you reasonable, but depend on it, I will carry my point. In this manner, Lady Catherine talked on, till they were at the door of the carriage, when, turning hastily round, she added, I take no leave of you, Miss Bennet. I send no compliments to your mother. You deserve no such attention. I am most seriously displeased. Elizabeth made no answer, and without attempting to persuade her ladyship to return into the house, walked quietly into it. She heard the carriage drive away as she proceeded upstairs. Her mother impatiently met her at the door of the dressing room to ask why Lady Catherine would not come in again and rest herself. She did not choose it, said her daughter. She would go. She's a very fine-looking woman, and her calling here was prodigiously civil, for she only came, I suppose, to tell us the Collinses were well. She's on her road somewhere, I dare say, and so, passing through Meryton, thought she might as well call on you. I suppose she had nothing particular to say to you, Lizzie. Elizabeth was forced to give into a little falsehood here, for to acknowledge the substance of their conversation was impossible. That's the end of chapter 56. Maybe one more chapter. How'd you get so cute? kidding. Would you like to say for the record what just happened?
No. I think it should be stricken.
Stricken from the record it is. This computer is getting really hot.
You can put it on.
It's super hot.
It's getting, it makes me sleepy.
Okay.
It'll probably fry my ovaries.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. It already fried certain things on my side. Chapter 57. The discomposure of spirits, which this extraordinary visit threw Elizabeth into, could not be easily overcome. Nor could she for many hours learn to think of it less than incessantly. Lady Catherine, it appeared, had actually taken the trouble of this journey from Rosings for the sole purpose of breaking off her supposed engagement with Mr. Darcy. It was a rational scheme, to be sure, but from what the report of their engagement could originate, Elizabeth was at a loss to imagine till she recollected that his being the intimate friend of Bingley and her being the sister of Jane was enough at a time when the expectation of one wedding made everybody eager for another to supply the idea. She could not herself had not herself forgotten to feel that the marriage of her sister must bring them into more frequently together, and her neighbors at Lucas Lodge, therefore, for their communication with the Collinses, the report she included had reached Lady Catherine, had only set that down as almost certain and immediate, which she had looked forward to as possible at some future time. In revolving Lady Catherine's expressions, however, she could not help feeling some uneasiness as to the possible consequence of her persisting this interference. From what had she said of her resolution to prevent their marriage, it occurred to Elizabeth that she must meditate an application to her nephew, and how he might take a similar representation of the evils attached to a connection with her she dared not pronounce. She knew not the exact degree of his affection for his aunt, or his dependence on her judgment, but it was natural to suppose that he thought much higher of her ladyship than she could do, and it was certain that, in enumerating the miseries of a marriage with one whose immediate connections were so unequal to his own, his aunt would address him on the weakest side. With his notions of dignity, he would probably feel that the arguments, which to Elizabeth had appeared weak and ridiculous, contained much good sense and solid reason. If he had been wavering before as to what he should do, which had often seemed likely, the advice and entreaty of so near a relation might settle every doubt, and determine him at once to be as happy, as happy as dignity unblemished could make him. In that case, he would return no more. Lady Catherine might see him in her way through town, and his engagement to Bingley of coming again to Netherfield must give way. If, therefore, an excuse for not keeping his promise should come to his friend within a few days, she added, I shall know how to understand it. I shall then give over every expectation, every wish of his constancy. If he is satisfied with only regretting me, when he might have obtained my affections in hand, I shall soon cease to regret him at all. The surprise of the rest of the family on hearing who their visitor had been was very great, but they obligingly satisfied it with the same kind of supposition which had appeased Mrs. Bennet's curiosity. And Elizabeth was spared from much teasing on the subject. The next morning, as she was going downstairs, she was met by her father, who came out of the library with a letter in his hand. "Lizzie," said he, "I was going to come look for you. Come into my room." She followed him thither, and her curiosity to know what he had to tell her was heightened by the supposition of its being in some manner connected with the letter he held. It suddenly struck her that it might be from Lady Catherine, and she anticipated with dismay all the consequent explanations. He followed her father to the fireplace, and they both sat down. He then said, "I have received a letter this morning that has astonished me exceedingly. As it principally concerns yourself, you ought to know its contents. I did not know before that I had two daughters on the brink of matrimony. Let me congratulate you on a very important conquest." The color now rushed into Elizabeth's cheeks in the instantaneous conviction of its being a letter from the nephew instead of the aunt, and she was undetermined whether most to be pleased that he explained it himself at all, or offended that his letter was not rather addressed to herself, when her father continued, You look conscious. Young ladies have great penetration into such matters as these. But I think I may defy even your sagacity to discover the name of your admirer. This letter is from Mr. Collins. From Mr. Collins? And what can he have to say? Something very much to the purpose, of course. He begins with congratulations on the approaching nuptials of my eldest daughter, of which, it seems, he had been told by some of the good-natured, gossiping Lucases. I shall not sport with your impatience by reading what he says on that point. What relates it to yourself is as follows. Having thus offered you the sincere congratulations of Mrs. Collins and myself on this happy event, let me now add a short hint on the subject of another, of which we have been advised by the same authority. Your daughter Elizabeth, it is presumed, will not long bear the name of Bennet, after her elder sister has resigned it, and the chosen partner of her fate may be reasonably looked up to as one of the most illustrious personages in this land. Can you possibly guess, Lizzie, who is meant by this? And he continues, this young gentleman is blessed in a peculiar way with everything the heart of mortal can desire. Splendid property, noble kindred, extensive patronage. Yet in spite of all these temptations, let me warn my cousin Elizabeth and yourself of what evils may incur by a precipitate closure with this gentleman's proposals, which, of course, you will be inclined to take immediate advantage of. Have you any idea, Lizzie, who this gentleman is? But now it comes out. My motive for cautioning you is as follows. We have reason to imagine that his aunt, Lady Catherine de Bourgh, does not look on the match with a friendly eye. Mr. Darcy, you see, is the man. Now, Lizzie, I think I have surprised you. Could he or the Lucases have pitched on any man within the circle of our acquaintance whose name could have given the lie more effectuality to what they related? Mr. Darcy, who never looks at any woman but to see a blemish, who has probably never looked at you in his life? It is admirable. Elizabeth tried to join in her father's pleasantry, but could only force one most reluctant smile. Never had his wit been directed in a manner so little agreeable to her. Are you not diverted? Oh, yes, pray read on. After mentioning the likelihood of this marriage to her ladyship last night, she immediately, with her usual condescension, expressed what she felt on the occasion, when it became apparent that on the score of some family objections on the part of my cousin, she would never give her consent to what she had termed so disgraceful a match. I thought it my duty to give the speediest intelligence of this to my cousin, that she and her noble admirer may be aware of what they are about, and not run hastily into a marriage which has not been properly sanctioned. Mr. Collins moreover adds, I am truly rejoiced that my cousin Lydia's sad business has been so well hushed up, and am only concerned that their living together before the marriage took place should be so generally known. I must not, however, neglect the duties of my station, or refrain from my declaring my amazement at hearing that you received the young couple into your house as soon as they were married. It was an encouragement of vice, and had I been the rector of Longbourn, I should have very strenuously opposed it. You certainly ought to forgive them as a Christian, but never to admit them in your sight, or allow their names to be mentioned in your hearing. This is his notion of Christian forgiveness. The rest of his letter is only about his dear Charlotte's situation and his expectation of a young olive branch. But, Lizzie, you look as if you did not enjoy it. You are not going to be missish, I hope, and pretend to be affronted at an idle report. For what do we live but to make sport of our neighbors and laugh at them in our turn? Oh, cried Elizabeth, I am excessively diverted, but it is so strange. Yes, that is what makes it amusing. Had they fixed on any other man, it would have been nothing, but his perfect indifference and your pointed dislike make it so delightfully absurd. Much as I abominate writing, I would not give up Mr. Collins' correspondence for any consideration. Nay, when I read a letter of his, I cannot help giving him the preference over even Wickham, much as I value the impudence and hypocrisy of my son-in-law. And pray, Lizzie, what has said Lady Catherine about this report? Did she call to refuse her consent? To this question, his daughter replied only with a laugh, and as it had been asked without the least suspicion, she was not distressed by his repeating it. Elizabeth had never been at more of a loss to make her feelings appear what they were not. It was necessary to laugh when she rather would have cried. Her father had most cruelly mortified her by what he said of Mr. Darcy's indifference, and she could do nothing but wonder at such a want of penetration, or fear that perhaps instead of his seeing too little, she might have fancied too much. That's the end of chapter 57. I think that time for good. It's time to say goodnight to the kitten.
Goodnight, kitten.
This is a very long series of chapters, and if you made it all the way through this, this recording is 50 minutes long, so you'll probably have to listen to it in sections. I hope you like that, my kitten boo. I hope you sleep well. Good night.